A Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome. So today we're diving deep into something that, well, often gets labeled as kind of difficult or maybe just stuff for museums.
Right. High art, maybe a bit intimidating.
Exactly. But we're talking about modernism. And the argument we're exploring, using Christopher Butler's brilliant work as our guide, is that it's not distant history. It's basically the DNA of almost everything around us now.
It really is. And for you listening, our goal here is to figure out that link. What connects, say, a Picasso painting that looks all broken up, a T.S. Eliot poem that feels just as fragmented, and even the design of a super functional modern office?
Yeah, how do those things relate?
It's about this huge shift, philosophically and culturally, that completely changed how we started to see reality itself. Butler helps us map that massive change.
It's like art suddenly stopped just trying to be beautiful and started asking really big, sometimes uncomfortable questions. Okay, so who is this guy, Christopher Butler?
Well, he's a major scholar, brings a lot of weight to this. He was a fellow at Christ Church, Oxford, really specialized in these 20th century movements.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes his take so, so useful, I think, is how he connects the dots. He doesn't just look at painting over here and literature over there.
Right, he doesn't keep them in separate boxes.
Exactly. He weaves it all together. The literature, painting, music, architecture, even philosophy, social theory. It's this holistic view that's key. Modernism was this explosion across all fields.
He sees it more as a shared mindset then. A common reaction to a world that felt like it was spinning out of control.
Precisely. And his goal isn't just academic. He really tries to demystify modernism, to show why it still matters, and connect the dots between the scholarly stuff and what you actually encounter every day.
Yeah.
He makes the revolution make sense.
Okay, so what's the big idea in the book, the central point?
Well, Butler argues modernism wasn't just some style that popped up out of nowhere. It was fundamentally a response, a necessary reaction, really, to the insane changes happening in the late 19th, early 20th centuries.
You mean like industrialization, cities booming, science, completely rewriting the rules?
All of that. And because the world was changing so drastically, modernism defined itself a lot by what it rejected. It looked back at the 19th century, especially that idea of realism art, just showing things as they look, and basically said, nope, that's not enough anymore. Maybe it's even dishonest.
So they ditched that. And other big ideas, too.
Yeah, they really questioned some core Enlightenment beliefs. Things like, you know, the absolute certainty of objective reality, the idea that humanity is always progressing linearly upwards, and even the supreme power of pure reason.
Wait, so if science was making leaps, why reject reason?
Ah, because science itself was showing how weird reality was. Think about Einstein, time and space aren't fixed, and Freud suggesting we're driven by unconscious desires we don't even understand. That shakes the foundations of simple objective truth.
Okay, I see. So the old ways of showing the world just didn't work anymore.
Exactly. Butler calls it the crisis of representation. The traditional tools like a novel that just tells a story from A to B or a painting with perfect perspective, they felt totally inadequate. They couldn't express the fragmentation, the speed, the psychological weirdness of modern life.
So all that experimentation, the stuff that looks difficult, it was actually a search.
A desperate search, really, for new forms, new languages that could be more honest about what it felt like to be alive then.
Okay. Let's break that down. How did this actually look? You mentioned the context, this turn inward.
Right. So between, say, 1880 and 1920, you have these huge intellectual bombs going off. Einstein's relativity, Freud's psychoanalysis. They suggested reality, both external and internal, was way more complex and uncertain than people thought.
And the result in art and literature was?
A major shift. The focus moves from painting the landscape outside to mapping the landscape inside the mind. The psyche itself becomes the subject.
How do you even do that? How do you show thought?
Well, that's where things like the stream of consciousness technique came in. Think James Joyce, Virginia Woolf. They tried to write down thought as it actually happens. Messy, jumping around, associative, mixing memory and present.
Not neat, linear sentences?
Not at all. It's chaotic, reflecting how our minds actually work, especially under the influence of Freud's ideas about the unconscious bubbling up.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to invent a way to show that inner reality.
Okay, so the inner world becomes key.
Yeah.
But where else do they look for inspiration if the old European traditions felt, well, dead?
This is fascinating. Butler talks about primitivism. Modernists got obsessed with art from outside Europe, Africa, Oceania, what they called primitive art.
Which sounds a bit problematic now.
It definitely carries baggage today, but back then, it wasn't just about liking the look of it. It was a huge philosophical move. They felt European culture was decadent, worn out, trapped in rules.
And this non-Western art seemed more alive.
Exactly. More direct, vital, emotionally raw, authentic. It felt like a way to bypass all that stale European convention and get back to something fundamental, a fresh start.
Is Picasso the big example here with Les Demoiselles d'Avignon?
Absolutely. The classic example from 1907. Those figures with faces like African masks, the jagged shapes. He's not trying to paint realistically at all. He's using that primitive style to smash traditional ideas of beauty, perspective, forcing you to see differently, violently almost.
Okay, so smashing old forms, looking inward, borrowing from other cultures.
Yeah.
What about the art itself, the actual lines and colors?
That leads straight into another key idea, formalism and the autonomy of art. Thinking goes, if art isn't just copying reality, then maybe its real value is in itself, in its own means.
Meaning the focus shifts to how it's made, not just what it shows.
Precisely. Form over content, you could say.
Mm.
Lines, shapes, colors, sounds, they become the main event. Art doesn't need to point to something outside itself. It can be its own reality.
And that gives us abstract art.
Yes. People like Kandinsky, Mondrian. They believed lines and colors could communicate spiritual or emotional truths directly without needing to depict anything recognizable, like a visual language with its own internal logic.
Okay, that makes sense for painting. But what about architecture? Modernist buildings, like from the Bauhaus school or Le Corbusier, seem so rational, so functional. Almost the opposite of chaotic inner feelings.
That's a great point. They stripped away all ornament, right? Emphasized geometry, industrial materials, Le Corbusier's machine for living idea.
Yeah, seems very different from stream of consciousness.
Butler connects them, though. He argues both were searching for authenticity. For abstract painters, it meant getting rid of representation to find pure form. For architects like Le Corbusier, it meant getting rid of decoration to reveal the building's true function.
Ah, so honesty and form. The building should look like what it does. No pretending.
Exactly. Rejecting anything that felt fake or merely decorative. So rational function became its own kind of modernist truth.
Okay, this is all tying together, which brings us to maybe the core feeling. Fragmentation, both of the world and the self.
Right, the idea of the solid, stable, unified individual, that kind of dissolved, influenced by Freud, Nietzsche. The self felt more like a collection of conflicting drives, memories, influences. Fragmented, unstable.
And literature captured this how? You mentioned Eliot earlier.
T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland is like the ultimate example. It's not one story. It's a jumble, a collage of different voices, different languages, bits of history, myths, all sort of smashed together.
Like channel surfing through a broken culture.
Kind of, yeah. It perfectly captures that feeling of cultural breakdown, personal disintegration, the struggle to find any meaning or coherence in it all.
And music went through something similar.
Definitely. Think Arnold Schoenberg. He basically threw out the rule book of harmony that had dominated Western music for centuries. Traditional keys, melodies, gone.
Atonality, right, where it sounds dissonant.
Exactly. He wanted to liberate dissonance, make all notes equal, no comfortable home key. It was a way of mirroring that feeling that the old centers of order weren't holding anymore. Psychologically jarring, intentionally so.
Wow. Okay, so looking back at all this with Butler, what are the big themes we should take away?
Well, first, absolutely central is the crisis of representation. The old ways of showing the world just broke. They weren't enough. And that forced all this constant, sometimes really challenging, experimentation with form.
So the difficulty wasn't just artists being deliberately obscure.
Butler argues no, not primarily. It was a genuine, necessary search for forms that felt more psychologically real, more honest about the chaos and complexity than the old realism ever could be.
Okay, theme one. Inadequacy of old forms leads to experiment. What's next?
Theme two. Technology and cultural change. Modernism wasn't afraid of the new. It engaged directly with it. Photography, cinema, the speed of machines, these things seeped into the art. Techniques like montage, cutting images together quickly, or collage, pasting different things together. You see it in films, in data, in cubism. It reflects the fragmented, sped-up experience of modern urban life and these new media. Art started to look and feel like the modern world.
Interesting. And the third theme?
The democratization of culture. Now, modernism gets this reputation for being elitist, right? And some of it was, but there was also a strong impulse, especially in movements like the Bauhaus or Russian constructivism, to break down the walls between high art and everyday life.
like making good design available to everyone.
Exactly. They wanted art, functional design, rational planning to improve life for the masses, to shape everything from teacups to city plans, an attempt to integrate art into the fabric of society.
It's such a mix of destruction and creation. Butler mentions some quotes or key ideas that really capture this spirit, doesn't he?
Oh, definitely. These little phrases that pack a huge punch, they really distill the mindset.
Like Ezra Pound's famous call to action.
Yes. Make it new.
Right.
That wasn't just about tweaking things. It was a radical demand for innovation, a rejection of inherited forms precisely because they felt worn out, inadequate for the 20th century.
A real break with the past.
Totally. And then there's that line from W.B. Yeats, which captures the feeling of breakdown. The center cannot hold. It speaks volumes about that sense that all the old anchors, religion, politics, traditional culture, were just dissolving. No firm ground.
A feeling of chaos, really.
Mm-hmm. And then defining what art should do now, there's Paul Klee's idea. Art does not reproduce the visible. Rather, it makes visible.
Meaning it's not about copying surfaces anymore.
Right. It's about revealing things hidden beneath the surface, unconscious feelings, spiritual truths, the underlying structures of reality, making the invisible visible.
Okay, this is fascinating history, but fast forward to today. How does understanding all this actually help us now? What are the real-life applications?
Oh, loads, actually. For starters, critical thinking and media literacy. Think about advertising, music videos, even news reports today. They often use techniques born in modernism, fast cuts, collage, juxtaposition.
That montage thing you mentioned.
Exactly. Understanding where that comes from helps you see how you're being persuaded. You can analyze the form, not just the content. Why are they showing you these images in this order? It gives you critical distance.
So it makes you a smarter consumer of media. What else?
Well, think about fostering innovation in any field, really business, science, design. Modernism is like a masterclass in disruption.
That was so.
The willingness to just smash the existing rules. Cubism throwing out perspective, Schoenberg ditching tonality, Joyce abandoning linear narrative. It shows that big breakthroughs often require questioning the most fundamental assumptions, asking, what if the way we've always done this is just wrong?
That's a powerful lesson for anyone trying to create something new. Don't just tweak. Maybe you need to rebuild from the ground up.
Precisely. And maybe one more, on a more personal level, enhancing self-awareness.
How does modernism help with that?
The modernists focus on consciousness, seeing it as fragmented, contradictory, pulled between past and present, shaped by media, by the unconscious. That picture is actually very close to how modern psychology sees us.
So it gives us a language for our own internal complexity.
I think so. It helps us understand why we might feel pulled in different directions, why our sense of self isn't always stable. It offers tools for reflection that feel very modern.
Reflecting on Butler's book, what really struck me was how he makes these often intimidating ideas feel, well, understandable without dumbing them down.
Yeah.
He shows the difficulty wasn't arbitrary. It came from trying to be more real, more psychologically honest.
Yeah, he connects the dots so well. For me, the big takeaway is just how brave and rigorous modernism was. It wasn't just playing around. It was a serious attempt to forge new ways of making meaning when the old ways collapsed. And its fingerprints are everywhere today.
Absolutely. That sense of fragmentation, the blending of high and low culture, the focus on inner experience, the very look of our cities and objects. It's not just history.
It's the water we swim in. Its innovations are so deeply embedded in our 21st century world, shaping how we think, see, and feel, whether we realize it or not.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accatra Foundation.